really, really the most important issues? Are the hot issues really the most important issues?
That's an interesting question. sometimes little things become these gigantic controversies, and, you know, what's really going on behind the scenes is, you know, far more dramatically important in terms of affecting the quality of life of the people who live here. So, you know, that's, I mean, it's sort of interesting what is defined in the mainstream media as the hot issues, you know, probably are not the things that are influencing how people actually live. And so, but, you know, and many of the serious issues that do affect the quality of life never get out in the, you know, TV, radio.
Like what? Like what?
Well, like, I don't think I've ever seen any radio or TV or really even any major newspapers cover the issues of, you know, kinds of corruption and illegal activities in terms of land use, on zoning issues where, you know, certain developers or projects get favored treatment. They're allowed to take low-income money and not build low-income housing, or they're allowed to not do the environmental review that's legally required. You know, and outside of maybe the Daily Planet occasionally covering that kind of stuff, you know, the rest of the newspapers and certainly TV and radio, I can't remember ever covering those kinds of issues, you know, which are, I think, are pretty important to the quality of life of people who live in Berkeley.
F. You. Funny. That was my first
question.
S. T. S. T. O. Story of I. B. R. Brought. B. R. O. Broke. In. C. O. L.
College.
Oh. When you were a college journalist.
No. Well, land use is a very important subject, and it's something that the local government really does have direct control over what's going to happen, you know, what's going to be built and where will it be built. Right now, you know, Berkeley has a policy that with all these condos that are being built, basically not a single unit is truly affordable. Even though on paper we have a policy that whether it's rental units or condos, it's supposed to be a 20% of the units in the inclusionary ordinance are supposed to be affordable. The reality is, with the new policies, condos are allowed to be built where the developers charge like an extra $40,000 or maybe $50,000 for those units. So they make an immense larger profit. And anybody who's making 50% or 80% of the area median income can't afford to pay that extra $40,000 or $50,000. Some people will say, well, you have to do that or else no condos would be getting built. But in the rest of the state and in the rest of the Bay Area, thousands of condos are being built. You know, if you count San Francisco and Oakland, there's lots of them in the pipeline. And those cities, ironically, actually have the affordable units and don't let them charge the extra $40,000 to the people living in the so-called affordable units.
Yes. So, why? What? Who? Who gets the B? R? Who gets the bribes?
In that particular decision, I don't know that there were necessarily any bribes, but you know, it was a policy decision that the city council made, and the, you know, certainly the people who are doing these projects, some of those projects give large contributions to you know, elected officials. So there is, you know, some element of, there is a reward for supporting these bad policies. But, you know, I think if the voters of Berkeley could vote, do we want our condos that are being built to basically have no truly affordable units and have a worse policy than other cities around us? You know, that proposal would lose overwhelmingly by like 65-75%.
Yes.
But it was overwhelmingly approved by the city council. I was able to get added in a time limit so that this policy will expire at the end of 2 years. And so it will come back and we'll have rehash it at the city council level. But from my point of view, if you compare us to what's happening in adjoining cities, this is a horrendous policy. We also have, partly because of this policy, we have buildings that were scheduled to be built as rental units. Instead of being built, turned into rental units, they're proposing to switch them to condos, which then means, you know, the 20% of those units that were supposed to be affordable to rental, you know, housing. Now there's zero rental units, you know, happening out of those projects because they're being turned into condos that people have to buy.
We L O lost the R E C recycling. Oh, that was that once a year thing? Is that what you mean? No, we lost the recycling. Oh, the recycling center on King and Dwight.
Right.
Yeah, and that's not happening any other place, right? It wasn't, once that went, that just, there was nothing that replaced it.
Well, we are trying to find a way to replace that service because it, you know, Berkeley really does need to meet our recycling goals. And that particular location, because it was privately owned, we can't stop the owner from building something there. And we do need to build housing. So it's not an absolutely bad thing that housing is being built there. But it's horrible for our recycling rate that we lose an easy place for people to get to drop off their recycling. So we really need to actively look to see if there's another place, because forcing people to drive their recycling all the way over to 2nd and Gilman means that some of that stuff will not get recycled at all. And, you know.
And W-H-O, who's B-R-I, Bridge, B-R-I-G-H, was it to stop, the thing where once a year you get a notice saying that they're going to be picking up stuff in your neighborhood, and now it's more customized, whose bright idea was that? Because Albany still does it the other way.
Right.
Yeah. B, because it, K, I, killed the T, R, A.
Treasure?
T, R, what was it? T, R, A, tradition?
Oh.
The tradition?
Treasure hunt.
Yes, which was so much fun.
Well, it was fun, and it's also good for the environment. Ah. Instead of throwing all this stuff away, if people have the possibility to, you know, when I was a college student, my entire apartment was furnished with furniture and things that other people had thrown away out on the street or in their dumpster, and I scavenged it.
There is a F I L, a film, S about G L E A gleaning. Right.
Uh-huh.
And that was included in the gleaning.
Well, that's that's part of the whole sort of zero waste philosophy is reusing is a higher form of recycling than actually recycling.
Yes.
And one of the issues which Berkeley is moving very slowly on is the zero waste policy. Not only did we have a setback by getting rid of this recycling center at Dwight, but you know, we have
whose bright idea was what, the recycling center? The yearly thing. Whose bright idea was it to get rid of that?
As I understand it, it was part of the, you know, sort of, we're trying to save money, therefore we're reorganizing. Unfortunately, the way that the budget was decided and these different policies that are related to saving money, in my mind, the recent budget was seriously flawed because there are serious cuts being made to, like, services for seniors and the disabled community and, you know, bottom line services that really affect the quality of life. And yet, you know, we're pouring lots of money into other things because we actually have millions of extra dollars coming in the transfer property tax, because anybody who's selling their house right now is making such a big, their prices are so high that the transfer tax is coming in millions of dollars more than we estimated. So what some of us, Max Anderson, Donna Spring, and I tried to propose was that we take this extra millions that we're getting and shift half a million of that to avoid making these cuts, or even maybe a whole million. And we couldn't get that through the city council to we prevented some of the cuts, but we didn't stop all of those cuts, which financially we could have stopped those cuts. We could have stopped the cuts to the fire department as well, you know, which alarms people that the fire, you know, service is being reduced in any way.
I-S-E-E. I see that C A L California is B R I bringing in M O more M O more money than Y E A years P A past S so why the cuts?
It's a question of, you know, at the federal level, at the state level, and at the city level, it's a question of priorities. What are the things that are really important to the elected officials? And, you know, we have, you know, extraordinarily extreme cuts proposed at the federal level. And luckily, there's a few moderate Republicans who have prevented, you know, a lot of George Bush and his administration's really, really outrageous cuts have actually been stopped by the moderate Republicans and sometimes even by the conservative Republicans. So, I mean, if you actually look at all the cuts that were proposed, it's, I would literally call it insane. I mean, it's so extreme. At the state level, you know, we have a, you know, problem. We have a Democratic legislature and a Republican governor. So, you know, education is suffering, human services is suffering, and, you know, it's difficult. At the city level, though, you know, the voters of Berkeley have repeatedly voted in election after election for a majority of the city council. They vote for who is supposedly the progressive candidate. So at the city level, we shouldn't have these kinds of tragic cuts happening out of city money. And in fact, we should be putting money in to make up for the stupid cuts that are being made at the state and federal level. And we've had tiny bits of success at doing that, but not what I think is reasonably expected by the generally liberal to progressive voters of Berkeley.
S. So, are the PR progressives in Q in question, QUO in quotes, so are the progressives in quotes, REA really progressive?
Well, I try to be cautious about questioning people, how people choose to identify themselves. So what really matters to me is not whether or not somebody calls themselves progressive, but are you doing what needs to be done to help the people? If you call yourself a moderate or a liberal or a conservative and you're willing to support helping people, it sort of doesn't matter. But
is B A T E Bates doing that to help the people?
Well, that's a difficult question, as I'm sure Frank knew when he asked that question. But, I mean, I think Tom Bates deserves enormous credit for having ended the mean-spirited nature of the government of his predecessor. I mean, it was a battle zone where things that should never have been fought over became, because of personal and political hatred, his predecessor made life painful for everybody on the city council, basically, and many people beyond the council.
So I think
it's important to give Tom credit that he has transformed the atmosphere. He bends over backwards to be nice to everybody. He is an extraordinarily nice person.
But on the other side.
At the same time as he has transformed the atmosphere, I think it's accurate to say, that a lot of progressive ideas that start in Berkeley have not yet been implemented in Berkeley. And that we need to put pressure on the mayor and the city council. It's not just one person. If five members of the city council were progressive and wanted to push things, it wouldn't matter whether the mayor was for them or not. They could still happen. And in fact, with Shirley Dean, she resisted most of the progressive things we tried to do, and we got most of them done in spite of her. It may have taken a while. So, it's not just about one person.
May be you need A D E A a dean to M A make it more obvious.
As somebody who suffered from her attacks on a regular basis, it's hard for me to think of that as, as a positive. I think instead of taking a retrograde step of going back to having a mean mayor or somebody to sort of mobilize us against them, I think what we need to do is to be smart enough and sophisticated enough to realize we have a city council where the people are nice and reasonable, and we need to organize ourselves I think if progressives in Berkeley really get organized and pressure the city council, it'll be much easier to convince Tom Bates and the current, you know, the people who call themselves progressive, it'll be much easier to persuade them if there's an organized constituency pressuring them. But what frequently happens is, you know, we have a little tiny group here that's working on the precautionary principle, which is a wonderful environmental and health policy. But it's a little tiny group. And San Francisco has actually taken several steps beyond what Berkeley has done on this on this environmental issue. And, you know, the zero waste policy, Berkeley has taken a baby step, but there are lots of bigger steps that the activists, environmental activists, have proposed that we need to do. And so, you know, but once again, it's a small little group of people. You know, half a dozen people are lobbying the city council to do zero waste. Another half a dozen or ten or let's do zero precautionary principle. Another little group is saying let's have a tree ordinance, you know, but it's not a, you know, a massive organized constituency. When in Berkeley, when you're likely to see 100 or 200 people is, you know, when it's to oppose, you know, the war in Iraq or to oppose what's happening at Guantanamo Bay or, you know, with all these people being imprisoned seemingly illegally or like recently to support Cindy Sheehan. These are wonderful things and we can turn out hundreds of people on national and international issues, but we really, you know, we really have to turn out significant numbers of people to support these visionary ideas on a that we have power over locally right here in Berkeley. Because if Berkeley really does have a zero waste facility and policy, that could be, you know, Berkeley's recycling policies from the 70s have become sort of the model of what everybody does all over the country now. And we need to recapture that momentum and adopt these kinds of policies, which can then, you know, I think in a Republican-controlled, you know, Supreme Court, presidential administration and Congress, you know, we're not going to get visionary policies out of the U.S. government anytime real soon. But we, if we can do them on the local level, they could become the model of a zero waste policy could happen in other cities and all over the country.
L-O-C. Local. Locally. Is
where the action is,
where it's at, where you have the most effect.
We could have, I would say, in recent years, although we have an ostensibly progressive city council and mayor, there's been lots of ideas proposed by Berkeley residents that have been adopted by, you know, Oakland, San Francisco, El Cerrito, you know, the instant runoff voting. Had, you know, 72% of the voters voted for it. But we, you know, right now we have no plan to do that in our next election cycle in 2006.
Why not?
Because the Diebold Corporation that Alameda County uses doesn't want to do it. They're trying to throw roadblocks and charge us hundreds of thousands, like 900,000 is their latest estimate. Of course, in San Francisco, they have two companies bidding to do instant runoff voting election for them, which is their policy too, and they've already held an election by instant runoff voting.
So why doesn't Berkeley have more than one company bidding?
It'll be coming up in September. Hopefully the city council will get on board to push Diebold, or if they don't do what they need to do, we should push them out of the way and look at some of these other companies that have the technology.
Is W wrong with the P R progressives?
I don't really want to criticize the those particular people. I think that the single major reason why lots of progressive ideas are initiated in Berkeley but are happening in other cities is because we're trying, a handful of people are trying to do each different little thing, and there isn't a strong movement to pressure the city to do each of these things. I think if we develop that strong movement, I think the innate sympathies of the city council are in the right place. And I think they're wonderful people, and they just need to be pressured by the public to tell them this is what the public wants. You know, the public has said we want instant runoff voting.
But isn't it enough that you said the large percentage of people that voted for instant runoff, isn't that enough of a push for someone on the city council?
It's a factor, but, you know, there's bureaucratic inertia. There's the fact that the county has resisted this. The county administration has resisted it. So honestly, we just got a new acting registrar of voters for Alameda County, who is actually meeting with council members and the public from San Leandro, Oakland, and Berkeley. All three of those cities have policies that we want instant runoff voting to some extent. So, you know, we're inching along, but, you know, we really need, on each of these policies, we need to create a stronger force to build the momentum. You know, when there's a bumper sticker that I've seen many times says, when the people lead, the leaders will follow. And my experience, you know, is that whether they're progressive or whether they're conservative, you know, most elected officials, you know, are not out there coming up with 100 ideas of how to lead. They're going to follow where the people push.
Not like you.
I actually work full time trying to keep up with the ideas of the people of Berkeley. I actually, hardly any of the things that I propose are my own ideas. I hear them from other people in Berkeley. So I'm not an exception to that rule. I try to be responsive to people when they put their ideas forward. But it's the very smart people, you know, of Berkeley and the Bay Area who propose all these ideas. It's not my ideas. I'm not that smart. I wish I was. I wish I had thought of all those things.
I-T-A talk W with A Amy, what's your last name? Amy Allison. She was a guest on the show.
Oh,
recently.
Great. Yeah, wonderful person.
Yeah. A. About. P. O. L. Politicians. Politics. Of. P. A. S passion we need to more politicians
I think it helps if you have people who are passionate and really care a lot. But it's not... I mean, there are some people who vote the right way and they're not all that passionate. So I guess I try not to be very judgmental. And if somebody's willing to vote, you know, for a progressive policy, it's sort of, you know, it doesn't... I guess when I first got elected, I was like shocked that elected officials do not read the documents that, you know, like the council packet sometimes is this thick. And I thought, oh, well, of course everybody reads it. But now that I'm elected official, I realize, you know, generally most elected officials at any level of government, I've learned, really don't read all that stuff. You know, at the state level or federal level, they rely on their paid staff to read it and tell them what's good or bad. And at the local level, they just, if somebody complains a lot, then they'll read that part. And the rest of it, I mean, it takes me, you know, many hours. I mean, sometimes I don't sleep the night before a council meeting because I have, you know, if they give us, recently they gave us a stack of paper about this high on Monday for the Tuesday night meeting. And I didn't sleep that night, you know. So it's sort of expecting an awful lot out of your elected officials that they're going to have sleepless nights in order just to read what information they're given in their staff reports. So as an elected official, it's hard for me to fault other elected officials or other council members for not having read everything, because I know it's very physically draining to try to keep up. But they should vote the right way, no matter whether they read it or not.
That's my job. Your job is to give elected officials a hard time.
Yeah, I think elected officials, in recent times, when a bunch of people show up and lobby the city council to save programs from being cut, those programs, you know, had the most likely chance of not being cut severely because they brought 50 people to come and give their, you know, their sob stories and their success stories. And, you know, the council members hearing from so many members of the public would say, like, well, okay, let's not cut that. So, you know, to some extent, that's a testimony to the effectiveness of our democratic system that, you know, if you can get, you know, the people to show up and pressure the council, you know, there's a pretty decent chance in Berkeley that you'll win.
Or even
beyond.
If you are loud.
Yeah, a small group that's loud, that has good information, can persuade the city to do the right thing. That's true. And, you know, there's, recently there's been like several incidents of such hypocrisy. One of them is Transaction Corporation's executives lecturing the city council about how we should build parking in downtown Berkeley. Now, Transaction Corporation happens to own the Hinks parking garage, and the courthouse, the county was going to build a courthouse there and replace all the parking. And Transaction did this massive campaign with signs all over downtown that if you allow the courthouse to come in here, it will destroy downtown Berkeley. There will be no businesses left in downtown Berkeley. I'm exaggerating just a tiny bit, not much. And we can't lose it. And I'm like, but they're going to replace every parking space that they tear down. And they're like, we can't even lose that parking temporarily for the 9 months that it would take to rebuild it. Well, then, after they killed the courthouse, Transaction Corporation turned around like 2 years later and said, by the way, that parking garage that if you tore it down temporarily for the courthouse, it would destroy downtown, we're going to tear it down and not replace most of that parking in order for our corporation to make more money than we would have made from the courthouse. And they're lecturing us about what we're doing down downtown parking. Transaction Corporation is responsible for most of the loss of downtown parking. They're taking away hundreds of spaces. And yet, you know, their executives, who happen to give lots of money to Berkeley politicians, you know, say this and get away with it and, you know, rarely get challenged.
Or the A R T art M O movie theater. That's the one you
fine
mean the fine arts theater?
Yeah. Well, that's sort of part of a string of you know, sort of sometimes illegal, sometimes immoral, and sometimes shady transactions. Most recently, that developer was lecturing the Planning Commission about affordable housing and how we have to do more for affordable housing. Now, this is another nature of, another form of hypocrisy. This is the same developer who threatened to sue the city of Berkeley to wipe out our inclusionary zoning ordinance, which is the policy that you have to have 20% of your units be affordable. Now, this person who threatened to sue us to wipe it out altogether, and who got the council to change the rules to give them low-income housing money to build somewhat higher-level income units and not to have the very low-income units required, that was like $650,000 of the city's money that was shifted into a higher income level. For that person to be lecturing us about affordable housing is the height of hypocrisy. And once again, it's up until now, I haven't seen any mention in the media of either of these gigantic hypocrisies of the last month or so. And so these big people with lots of money, both of whom give, you know, have given enormous amounts of money through themselves, their families, their contractors, their subcontractors, their employees. You know, they give maximum campaign contributions from multiple people to city elected people. And, you know, this does not get exposed. And then, you know, for like when the campaign for public finance of elections, a lot of people are like, well, I don't know, you know, everything's fine in Berkeley. Why do we need campaign finance reform? Well, I mean, these two examples alone are enough of a reason why we need campaign finance reform, given how much influence they've had.
And then pool, POOLITI.
Politicians.
Tell us. Don't. Fight the B.I. the big guys. They always win. They always win. S. So you should try to get as much as, try to stay on their good side and get as much as you can from them. That's what we were told.
My experience in Berkeley politics is that, you know, people who suck up to people and try to get sweet talk them into doing things have a tiny degree of success, and that's a good strategy sometimes. But, you know, most of our biggest victories have come from having an organized, you know, social movement that demands fighting for our rights and stopping the corruption.
Yes.
You know, there is a place for sweet talk. And it is reasonable and smart to be as nice as you can to people to try to educate them and help them understand the importance of your issue. But there's also a suitable and necessary place for having demands or requests and putting pressure on that you have to do this. Like the students were talking to the university for years saying, we need more housing, student housing. We need affordable student housing. And the chancellor was like, we don't think there's any need for any more student housing. After the students organized and had sleepouts at the office, dining and housing office, and eventually we actually slept out on the chancellor's lawn. And at one of the rallies, I was there with my pajamas and my teddy bear with the students, supporting them. And after this series of activism where the students and their environmental supporters and neighborhood supporters were on TV several times, several days in a row, suddenly the university is like, well, we'll give you 500 beds, we'll give you 800 beds. Eventually, they gave the students over 1,000 beds of new student housing. Now, if the students hadn't put the pressure on, I really doubt that that housing would have been built and that's there. It's open today. You know, they just opened some of it up. So, you know, there's lots of examples where social movements put the pressure on and got things accomplished. I mean, those are actual buildings that you can look at today that exist because of a social movement amongst the students in a coalition with environmentalists and neighborhood groups.
It is G H A. It's hard to C O N convince people of that B E because even when you win. That was our experience when we fought the contractor next door to get what we wanted, and we really had to work hard for years to rally the neighbors and every step of the way, you know. And then we won.
Uh-huh.
And when we touched base again with some of the neighbors to say, hey, we got what we wanted, to our shock, they said, oh, I don't think that happened because of what we did. We said, well, why do you think it happened? Why do you think he's not building what he wanted to build and he's building what we asked? Well, you know, but like, you know, so people still don't want to like accept the responsibility that they got it done by what they did.
Uh-huh.
They don't you use the J U juice that comes with that victory to go further.
Uh-huh. Well, the people in power, of course, deny that they changed their policies because of protest rallies or because of letters. You know, they're like, well, you know, I mean, when I was a kid, you know, one of the formative experiences was Richard Nixon saying, I never watch the news when there's a peace rally against the Vietnam War. And yet, you know, then the reporters came out with like, and by the way, you know, they were like, every 15 minutes there's a report and he watches, you know, I mean, it was obviously lying, but they're always trying to marginalize social movements and say, well, that doesn't really matter. And, you know, so, you know, it's understandable that, you know, there's degree of cynicism and fear and doubt that, you know, getting active doesn't really matter because there's, you know, powerful forces sending that message. But, you know, in my experience, I've seen, you know, all over the country and all over the world, social movements can have a profound influence at changing the course of history.
And S M A small.
Yeah, and I think in small ways you can do that in cities, you know, all over the country, and, you know, sort of try to build that up. So I think, you know, I think Berkeley people understand that because, you know, we have probably more members of the Sierra Club and more members of the ACLU and the National Organization for Women and all these different active organizations, you know, we have, you know, immense numbers of people in Berkeley who belong to these groups. And, you know, and they're doing their advocacy. We, you know, Berkeley provides national and international leaders of social movements of all kinds, the disabled movement, senior activists, youth. Right now there's some young people at Berkeley High who are advocating for lowering the voting age in Berkeley and or the state of California to 16 or 17. Their Berkeley proposal is to lower it to 17 in school board elections to address the concern. Some people say, well, kids don't know that much. 17-year-olds don't know that much about things. So they made a practical decision to say, well, okay, let's have it only, let's have only 17-year-olds vote in school board elections, not in all the other things, because nobody can say we don't know what's going on in the schools, because we're there more than anybody else. So, you know, to me, that's a pretty smart and sophisticated youth activism movement that, you know, what they would really like is to lower the voting age for everything, but as a stepping stone towards that, they've come up with this proposal that they're trying to get voted on in Berkeley, just affecting the school board and just making it 17. So, you know, we've had leadership in the free speech movement, in the apartheid movement, in, you know, environmental movements, David Brower. I mean, Berkeley is a bastion of leaders in many social movements of all kinds. Intellectual leaders of people at the university and, you know, activist leaders. So we just have to channel their ideas and activism.
And we have a lot of them on this show.
Great. Well, I'm honored to be one of the people that you invited to be here for your show, and I think it's important to have local community access. One of the issues coming up in the next year or two is renewing our contract. Comcast took over the contract, and, you know, during the entire length of these contracts with all these different corporations, basically none of these corporations have ever been in compliance with the contract of what they're supposed to provide to the people of Berkeley in terms of services.
How not?
The city had a telecommunications task force that Sally Williams and Paul Blake and George Conklin, a bunch of people were on, L.A. Wood, and they came up with a whole list of things that the contract was out of, that the company was out of compliance, and the city has been pressuring them to do some of the things on that list, but hopefully, you know, with a new contract coming up, that gives us a chance to renegotiate. In our renegotiations, we have to be cognizant of the technological changes that have happened since these contracts were started. We have to get the infrastructure in place so that, you know, our cable hookups that we're providing are state-of-the-art, and, you know, give an equivalent amount of service to the people of Berkeley as what they've been promised all along, but which they haven't yet been delivered.
Any PL plan to offer free wireless internet to the people at Berkeley?
We don't have a plan. I mean, this idea has floated a few times, and I haven't seen a, you know, sort of like a serious practical proposal of how to accomplish it. But it's certainly something that people are talking about and interested in.
Other cities have done it.
Yeah, other cities have done or are further along in the process than us on multiple.
And the POW power, that powers that be, is trying to make it illegal to let a city offer free wireless internet.
Oh yeah, there's all kinds of reactionary legislation that's trying to tie the hands of cities and counties. There's there's a Senate bill coming up next week that would stop cities from having policies on genetically modified food, because cities like Arcata are starting to have policies. They have a proposed state law that no city could have any regulations at all. But
that
we have to fight those back against those.
That is one example. When, where, we were SU successful. We did it through the local natural grocery store, but we started putting pressure on them to, if they weren't willing to get rid of genetically modified foods, that they would at least label them. Mm-hmm. And that started a whole snowball thing that's actually being organized nationally and including Canada, and it's all kind of coming from this grocery store. And yeah, it's been a few years now in the works doing it. But that was all from us, you know, writing letters and, you know, doing a lot of complaining. P, U, pudding, F, L, flyers. Well, we actually didn't have to do that, but we had the flyers printed out and were ready to do it, and that was the point where they said, okay, we'll do something. But the flyers were something. We were going to stand out in front of the door. Do you think a natural grocery store should have genetically modified ingredients and not let us know about it?
Mm-hmm.
We had them all Xeroxed and ready to go, and boom.
That's
then
great.
They made the decision.
Mm-hmm.
We, L, E, A, leaked it. Yeah, that we were ready to do it. Right.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, this, so, I mean, it's partly the success of those kinds of efforts, which is making the industries put more and more pressure on the federal and state government to restrict what, you know, local governments can do.
Yeah.
So, you know, with that particular law, I think there's a good chance we can stop it. We've got a pretty strong coalition statewide.
I heard it will not even
be voted on?
To be voted on.
Oh, okay. Well, that, the latest emails we got were that it's going to be voted on in the next 2 weeks. But, you know, hopefully.
Corey, what do you know about that? Because Corey is our person the natural grocery store.
SB 1056 is the bill. And
do you know anything about that? The rumor that Frank heard that it might not even make it to the vote? I, R, E, I read it in your D. In his day, Frank read it in your day. He said he doesn't know about that rumor.
Oh, okay. Well, but that's just sort of one corporation. We have, there are so many horrible things that not only that the government and corporations are doing. It boggles the mind to think. Right in this, I think in the last week or so, Sutter Corporation, which owns Summit and Alta Bates, amongst their many other hospitals, they were sued last year, I believe, about their discriminatory pricing, whereby if you have insurance, you have one price, but if you don't have insurance, they charge you a whole lot more. So if you're poor and you're not covered by insurance, or even if you're just middle class, you're going to pay a whole lot more for that exact same service. So they were sued for that. So very recently, Sutter Corporation just filed a lawsuit against the uninsured people of the Bay Area and California for daring to challenge the fact that they have a discriminatory pricing policy. And how could you imagine that Sutter Corporation, and they're supposedly a nonprofit organization, and everybody thinks, oh, nonprofits are pure and holy and they're out to help people, but sometimes nonprofits become so big that they become just as corporate in their mentality of, you know, getting bigger and having more money, and they lose track of the fact, like, well, but the reason you were started was, like, to help people. And, and so, I mean, it's just flabbergasting that Sutter Corp would sue all these people, a countersuit, you know, to defend their discriminatory pricing. It's outrageous.
I B H E I heard that someone in BTV said I F fought censorship. It was selfish motives. When the person was asked why at their big anniversary thing, they didn't acknowledge. We went to the big anniversary thing, mainly because we thought it would be an opportunity to meet people that we work with all the time but have never met.
Yeah.
We were the elephants in the room, Frank said.
Yeah.
We had no idea it was going to be that way either. We were kind of like, oh, let's meet all these people. We're always having them. I mean, nobody, it's like, ooh. And then they did this whole thing about that they're the only organization that fights, is free and fights censorship and stuff. And they did a whole history, and they didn't even mention that whole battle we did, that, you know. And so then one of the producers there that's been on this show asked somebody at BTV, why didn't you even mention, you know, the fight that Frank Moore was involved in? And they said, oh, he just did that for selfish reasons. That wasn't about censorship. He only cared about his own show. And that's why we didn't acknowledge it.
Uh-huh. Well, I think Berkeley Community Media has been a leader in certain ways and has been, you know, a stronger defender of, you know, various kinds of programming than many other cable stations around the country, because I have a lot of friends who have volunteered in this stuff, and they were shocked that, you know, community media could be so reactionary in so many places when it's supposedly the bastion of free speech and openness. So Berkeley Community Media has actually been quite positive in comparison to most other, even in comparison to some in the Bay, quite a few in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is, you know, a queasiness that some people feel at times about, you know, like, well, let's sort of stay away from that controversial issue. And I know when, you know, some people in Berkeley, when I point out, like, transaction corporations killed our courthouse in order to make millions of dollars, people are like, well, you know, why do you have to mention that? I mean, that's like, that's last year's news.
Yeah.
Like, well, it's this year's news because they just tore down that same parking garage now. And it's not that I'm trying to rehash ancient history from 2 or 3 years ago. It's this year's news because this year they tore down the same parking garage for their own profit.
And
the censorship battles, you know, it's not just that you've had to fight for this show and for the other shows like that are on Berkeley Community Media, but, you know, that fight is going on right now because some people were in the newspaper recently attacking Berkeley Community Media for alleged obscenity and various things. You know, there will always be some people who just, you know, they just can't grasp that, you know, what free speech really is, and, you know, they just have to squelch it, and if it's a subject that makes them uncomfortable, you know, they try to stop people from saying it. Not only stop them from hearing it, but stop anyone from hearing it.
When you are FTA targeted, that is when you have the most effect. That's what Frank responded when they said that it was a selfish act on his part. He said when you're targeted as he was, that's when you have the most effect.
Yeah. Well, I don't agree that because somebody's defending themselves, that is a selfish thing. In fact, enlightened self-interest is one of the most powerful forces for social change. Is the women's movement a greedy movement because women don't want to be battered and don't want to be making half as much money as men make? You could say the entire feminist movement is greedy and selfish because women, you know, have the audacity to think that they should be treated the same as men and that that's selfish of them. But maybe there's a tiny bit of enlightened self-interest in there, but it's also for the betterment of society at large.
Yes.
So, you know, I think...
F-R-E, free, freedom, is not I-N-D, individual. Freedom is not individual. It is everyone. So if you're fighting for your freedom, you're fighting for everyone's freedom on whatever the issue.
Yes, we hope so. Although, you know, getting people and getting social movements to actually support each other is not always, you know, easy and isn't always done. Some people in some social movements, you know, want to avoid anybody else's controversy. Today I heard Dolores Huerta speaking from the United Farm Workers Union. They are currently boycotting Gallo wine because they have... Gallo has sort of restructured themselves so that most of the farm workers are not allowed to be members of the union. So they have a union, but they're refusing to let like 3/4 of the workers be in the union because they're considering them temporary workers. So the farm workers has been forced to have a boycott of Gallo wine in order to respond to these horrible policies. But, you know, in talking about this, Doris Huerta was not just talking about the Gallo wine boycott. She talked about, you know, 10 other social issues and how we have to oppose, you know, Schwarzenegger's ballot measures coming up in November, and we have to defend women's right to choose. You know, so having a vision of advocating for all these different social movements is really, you know, it's wonderful, but it's, you know, it's not, a lot of people don't have that comprehensive commitment, and they're more into, well, this is my movement and I'm going to work just on this movement, and those other controversial things, you know, like free speech, well, I'll sort of support that, but I'll stay away from that because I want to stay focused on my one thing.
Two in they don't understand it is all one.
Connected. Yeah.
It's all one.
In many ways, it's all one battle. And coalition building is extraordinarily valuable, you know, and in a question of effectiveness, groups, you know, that have built coalitions and support other people, the people that they met while working to support those other social movements are more likely to rapidly jump in and support them just because they know each other and work together. You know, there is an element of risk if you, you know, try to support every cause and social movement under the sun, you know, that you can burn yourself out because there are so many human rights battles going on. But you know, it is possible to...
But if you see it is all one thing, everything you, everything you do, G-O, goes in to the one thing.
Yeah, there's a synergistic influence of one social movement to another, or one cause to another, that, you know, can be very beneficial. For instance, you know, we have a lot of people in Berkeley who have been working on supporting the Claremont Hotel workers. There's a boycott of the Claremont Hotel right now because the spa workers have tried to organize a union, and the management has fired them, suspended them, threatened them, and done illegal things to the employees. So, you know, there's a broad boycott of the Claremont Hotel. So out of that network of people knowing each other, then when the Honda dealer took over and basically kicked out half their employees, we were able to get a very fast boycott of the Honda dealer on the Berkeley Honda on Shattuck, you know, because people know each other from, pardon me, having worked on the Claremont boycott. A lot of sympathetic people know each other already. So, you know, by having built a coalition, you know, you can respond to the latest injustice faster because you know each other and you have a working relationship.
The A C L the ACLU would not have been R E A
ready
to take on the city council over the obscenity thing if they did not S C that one it would e
establish precedent.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, if the reactionary people had been able to coerce Berkeley into these extreme proposals of restricting the community media, then any other city in the country, people may be like, well, even in Berkeley, they have these reactionary policies, so of course you should do it. And that's a way to silence the dissent and the, you know, free speech voices.
That was R E A really why I fought so hard, because you saw that that was what would happen.
Yeah.
If people would use Berkeley as an example.
Yeah. Well, that's why, I mean, Berkeley is a very small city. It's like 100,000 people, basically. There are I don't know how many suburban cities. I mean, it's not even a big city like San Francisco or even San Jose. I mean, there are very few cities, if any, that you can think of that have only 100,000 people that have such a reputation all over the world that you say Berkeley, you know, when you're touring in Africa or touring in Europe, you know, people know where you're from. And, you know, but, you know, while it's a wonderful treasure that we have that reputation, it also means when we mess up, we're not just messing up for the people of Berkeley, we're messing it up. You know, so it's a wonderful joy that Berkeley has such a great reputation, but it's, you know, it's something that we have to keep up. That's why the recent, you know, fiascos with the Peace and Justice Commission, where the Peace and Justice Commission couldn't get the votes to support the, creating a U.S. Department of Peace. Now, How could the Peace and Justice Commission not support creating a U.S. Department of Peace? This is Dennis Kucinich's project he's been working on for years and years. Eventually, we got the city council to vote for this, but it's an embarrassment that the Peace Commission wouldn't support it. And so it's not just that. This gets back to what we were saying earlier in terms of some people like to villainize Tom Bates, like he's what's wrong with why Berkeley isn't progressive enough. And I think that's a very simplistic, like some of them came and said, Tom Bates should resign at the city council meeting because of the disgusting settlement with the university environmental lawsuit. It was a disgusting deal, and, you know, it's horrible and has really bad impacts. But, you know, just changing one person, when that one person has done a lot of good on other issues, you know, it's not that simple. So, you know, we need really good people on the city council. We also need really good people serving on commissions, because commissions either, you know, make advice to the city council, or sometimes they make decisions themselves that are binding.
I was thinking of running for city council. This was a year or so ago. Well, I think, partly because through our experience with fighting the censorship thing, we realize the power in local, you know, how much power one can have in local stuff. But I think we also realize that if we did something like that, we'd pretty much have to stop everything else we did. If Frank happened to get elected, that would be the end of life as we knew it.
City council is a pretty massive commitment.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that's what stopped us, really.
Not very well paid, you know, so it really, to do it right takes a lot of time and energy.
I would have L... loved, L-O, lost, my, S-S-I, my, S-A, T-T-E, N,
sanity?
No. Attendance. You would have lost your SSI, your attendance. M, Medi-Cal. And my B, TV show.
Well, I don't think you would have lost any of those things, partly because for several reasons. One, in the unlikely chance that you were to win, the city, not to be mean or you know, just be realistic.
Why? why unlikely?
The
H E hey, that is a C H A. That's a challenge.
Sorry, that's just my, you know, wild guess without sitting down and analyzing it.
Oh, N, Donna Spring, S, said the same thing.
Oh, sorry. Anyway, I think, you know, if a disabled person gets elected, you know, I think we have a moral obligation to try to make sure that they get, you know, whatever infrastructure they need in order to have them serve in office. So, for instance, Donna receives a certain small amount of money to give her extra staff people because she needs help doing certain things that other council members don't need. So I think, you know, if a person, I would hate for somebody watching this show to think, oh, well, I'm disabled, so I can't run for office because I'd have to give up everything. I think we have a moral obligation to the disabled community to equalize anything that they would lose by running, that we, the city, should make up for that in order to allow any disabled person should have a fair chance to run for office. We've done it in a small way with Donna Spring. She doesn't get that much, but she gets a little extra. And I think if a disabled person wants to run, they should, you know, they should run and then, you know, push to make the city make up for anything that they might lose because of, you know, federal or state or other, you know, policies. And anyway, that's
S. So, why would I lose?
Well, if you live in District 1,
Linda Mayo,
is that right?
Mayo.
Well, number one, in nationally, statewide, and locally, generally the incumbent wins almost all the time. It is very, very rare that incumbent doesn't win. So, you know, unless Linda Mayo has, you know, suddenly decided that she doesn't like being on the city council, it's
not G. That's not good.
Well, it's not good when it's reactionary people who are staying in power, but it's good when they're progressive people that are getting elected. And
H E Hey. Who is M more progressive between the two, you and Linda? Oh, no, sorry. Then me. Who is more progressive than me, Frank is asking.
Well, I don't know that the voters... I don't know that the number one thing to the voters is who is the most progressive person. I mean, that's a factor for some voters. But, you know, in Berkeley, some voters are Republicans and some voters are moderate. So, you know, that's just one of the elements of the equation.
I can not L E L A
learn
E A leave the H O U. I cannot leave the house without, no matter, every single time Frank leaves the house, people come up to him excitedly and say that they watch his show all the time.
Great. Yeah, being a media celebrity is a big help, you know, as Arnold Schwarzenegger discovered in his campaign. And other, you know.
That gives the L I E the lie. That gives the lie to L to P E people don't
want.
W A oh, people don't watch BTV. That gives the lie to that when people say, oh, people don't watch BTV.
Oh yeah, I've been astounded by how many people tell me they've, you know, watched Berkeley Community Media. It's, you know, when people would first tell me this, I'd be like, Or when they tell me, well, I watched you on city council last night. I was like, God, your life is so boring that you're watching a city council meeting. Because, you know, city council meetings, although I watch them and I'm there, but, you know, they're not all that interesting a lot of the time. But hundreds of people come up to me and say, oh, I watched the city council meeting. And, you know, and I know... When I'm at home, I often turn on Berkeley Community Media just to see what's going on locally. It's really interesting to know what's happening right around you. And they have a calendar, you know, with different events. Sometimes I find out about events. I'm like, well, why didn't those people invite me to that event? I want to go to that. But most of the time I get invited to more events than I can go to. But occasionally I find out about additional events by watching.
People have said Well, what, that they, when they come home in the late at night after a party, they always turn BTV on because they know there's always going to be something interesting on.
Right.
And when they have, when they have parties, guess what's on TV? BTV. Mm-hmm. And when they have people, in from out of town, they show them BTV.
Right.
As an example of a great public access. Mm. When I am in on B A R
Bart.
Yeah. It's always fun because there'll be the most recent time we got on Bart, and all of a sudden we hear some guy going, "Hey, Frank Moore is in the house!" Like screaming from, like, you know, all the way at the other end. And, you know, people are always, like, very warm and excited to meet Frank and talk to him.
Yeah.
So people are watching.
Yeah. Well, and to some extent, you're part of a movement, you know, by, you know, sort of as an artist and as an activist, you know, you're sort of a part of several network, multiple networks, you know, so of social movements, you know, that are very important to our society and our city.
D. I V E R S
diversity.
Now Frank always says I find a show that's more diverse than this show because we have, you know, we'll have you and Amy Allison on. In a couple of weeks we're having a local punk band, you know, in this whole room. We have every kind of person.
When are you having a right wing Republican come on? Anytime
well,
soon?
Well, we actually I am thinking of inviting Betty Olds to be on the show.
She's a moderate Democrat, not a right wing Republican. But you know, she has she hasn't been good on your particular issue, but you know, she isn't a right wing Republican. I think it's good to have dialogue with all kinds of people, whether you agree with them or not.
I had a R A C a racist on. That was years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, racial segregation and racism are amazingly, it's all these things are still lingering, and we have them having manifestations right here in Berkeley. People think like, oh, we're so together and we're so beyond all that. But, you know, whenever we do the planning commission does like, well, what do people value about Berkeley and our values? It's like diversity is always one of the top things. But if you look at our government, you know, who we, like, who's appointed to city commissions? There are virtually no Asians and hardly any Latinos, not very many African Americans, considering. Who gets hired? You know, Latinos and Asians don't get hired anywhere as near their representation. Who gets elected? You know, who gets the contracts with the money? We have a lot of work to do to get real racial diversity in all these different parts of Berkeley's government. In spite of Proposition 209, which restricts what you can do on affirmative action, it is possible to reach out, you know, certainly the people who I've appointed and recruited and hired, you know, have reflected, you know, all kinds of different ethnic groups. I've some council members have said, well, I don't know any African Americans or any Asians or Latinos who want to do it. I mean, we get lots of applications that have come into the city clerk, and if you look at just the applications, we've gotten every ethnic group imaginable has applied, and then but they don't get appointed in any fair numbers.
All kinds of people on Lover, all kinds of races and ages and interests that have shows on Lover, on this SH, and on this show as well, right. I don't go out of my, Frank doesn't go out of his way to, I want more African Americans. It's just kind of happens that way.
Well, that's why it's sort of surprising to me that we have such limited diversity. I didn't feel when I got elected that I was going out of my way to find any particular group. And, you know, if you look at who I appoint, they're just all kinds of people. Mm. But you look at who most of the council members appoint, you know, now we sort of have institutionalized tokenism where most of the council members have one black, one Asian, and one Latino. I mean, it's sort of an advancement over 10 years ago when maybe people thought, well, I need to have one black. But now just about everybody on the council has one black, one Asian, and one Latino. And that's considered diversity. I would be embarrassed if, you know, I was appointing 40 or I forget how many people exactly, about 40 people, and I had exactly one black, one Asian, and one Latino. I would think that that sort of looks strange and contrived.
You. N. Funny. M. O. Most. People. Who. Oh, come up to Frank. Are black men, you know, I don't know, like not real old, like middle, you know, maybe 20 to 40-year-old black men are most of the people that come up to Frank about watching the shows.
Yeah, well, I'm sure all kinds of people watch. And
every, even... B. E. Betty Olds watches. It sounds like she does when she talks in such detail about what's... All right, Franklin, I need to read that article now.
I do not assume that because people comment on a book that they have necessarily read the book. I don't assume that because they comment on a TV show that they've necessarily watched the TV show. There's... People hear some rumor and they, you know, they spout it as if it's the gospel truth. And I think one should be careful and actually do one's homework and research what's really going on before you run around attacking people or
B.
saying things.
E. Betty Olds. You are invited on to this show as a guest. You're speaking to her right now.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, because something is in the newspaper doesn't necessarily mean that that's exactly what the person said.
Yes.
I have been misquoted many times. Yeah. And, you know, so, you know, I've been in attendance at a meeting and then I read in the, you know, newspaper like, well, that's not the same meeting I was at. So, you know, it's, I always give people the benefit of the doubt as to whether or not they necessarily said something. But then, you know, if they keep saying it and if they keep doing the wrong thing, you know, then as much as you give them the benefit of the doubt, you also have to strenuously resist their, you know, the bad policies and threatening things that they try to do. So...
This was in the East Bay Daily News on Tuesday, August 16th, and the headline is Uncensored TV Bothers Some. It was written by Fred Dodsworth. Berkeley Community Media, located in the G Building at Berkeley High School, broadcasts local government meetings on cable channel 33. On channel 28, the same organization broadcasts locally originated or requested material, including adult theme programs that many consider pornographic, after 10 p.m. In exchange, if it is pornographic, it could not
be
on. In exchange for allowing Comcast Cable to operate as a monopoly cable service in the city, Berkeley receives 4% of Comcast's profits from what Berkeley Cable subscribers pay in monthly fees. People think Berkeley BTV is funded by the city money.
Well, the city gets money from the contracts with Comcast, and a portion of that money is put into Berkeley Community Media. And not all of that money, some goes to Berkeley Community Media. Some of that money actually goes into the general fund and just gets dispersed to many other things.
How much? What percentage of the money goes to BCM? Is that it? Do you know that?
You know, if you had asked me that a couple months ago, I would have been able to answer it. But I've sort of shifted away from the budget fanaticism into looking at all these other issues lately. So I can look it up, but I just don't remember. It's probably like half. But I don't remember
like
exactly.
PR people think their tax money is funding BCM.
Yeah, it's not a tax, it's a fee through the contract with Comcast.
In turn, the city contracts with Berkeley Community Media to broadcast city council meetings. The Berkeley School Board also contracts with the organization to broadcast its meetings, as does the Berkeley Rent Board. Historically, the city has passed on a little less than 40% of its Comcast revenues to Berkeley Community Media for those services and for the organization to act as production studio and classroom for citizens interested in creating their own broadcast material. So few people take advantage of local access that most serialized shows run three times throughout the station's monthly programming cycle. In San Francisco, a community programmer is lucky to have their show broadcast once a month, said Crescent Diamond, BTV's program coordinator. Yes, I should not be able to be on every day. Because Frank's programming is on 7 days a week. And he's always saying, you know, that's outrageous that there's enough free time that he can have something on every single day. Some nights, 6 hours straight, it will be our programming. There's a couple nights when it's like that. But minimum, it's 2.5 hours a night. Because we do repeats, like starting 1 a.m., it repeats this show. And there's a different show repeated every night. And that was as a result of, because we're up all night, and so we'll turn the TV on, and there would be nothing on. And we thought, my God, you know, there's nothing for us to watch, we gotta get something on here. So Frank suggested that, and again, to their credit, that Crescent went along with it and even went along with doing a different program every night, which is they never do that. So, I mean, that's great. But on the other hand, the fact that there's nothing else on except what we're putting on it. I-K-E, keep, T, telling people in they. Almost every guest that's on this show, Frank will make a case for public access television. He'll tell them the story about how much we're on and how much feedback we get and how it would cost them nothing, you know, because as everybody's got, like, thing they're into, if you just put it on a tape and bring it in, and, you know, it doesn't seem like most people quite get it, you know, that how easy it would be to do it and also how effective it is. Like... to at K PFA. Oh, people fight over time slots to get a show on KPFA, and they wouldn't have to do any fighting to get a video show on that would play three times a week. And yet somehow it's more like everybody wants to be on KPFA, and, you know, BTV streams. And so we have people all over the world that watch our show on BTV on the internet, so it's not like that. Oh well, it's just local. That's not even true.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, I'm not sure why. I know KPFA is a valuable resource, and you know, I've learned a lot by listening to them over the years. You know, so I think a lot of people in Berkeley and beyond, you know, rely on them. And, you know, developing the skills to do, you know, it's sort of an intimidating idea, like, oh, I'm going to do, you know, I'm going to do TV. That's sort of a scary idea, but...
That is one P problem. B, E, because, R, E, A, really, you just have to turn a tape in. That's really all you have to do.
Yeah.
Not do. Like, it doesn't have to... We turn in raw footage all the time, you know. We have somebody in Toronto that will go and tape, like, events and send us the tape. We just, you know, we hand it in just as it is, with blue screens in between when she turns the camera on and off. So you can really do that. I think people think that's not okay, or it's got to look better or something, but that's not true.
Well, you know, I think... eventually people will catch on to knowing that, you know, this is one way to get your message out and to, you know, reach people with your ideas.
Why are not you on BTV?
I have been on occasionally when we've, you know, when I've sort of put together certain special events. They broadcast the Holocaust Remembrance Day program that we've done.
But...
and, you know, we've... occasionally, like the State of the City program, the People's State of the City. So, you know, we've put together... I've helped put together some programs that... you know, I think, you know, that were really good programs. And, you know, the Holocaust Remembrance Day, I think, was very powerful, people said, when they watched. It was only 1 hour, and it, you know, had music and poetry and testimonials. And, you know, it's a subject that I feel very passionate about. You were talking earlier about people, you know, I get very emotional about those kinds of subjects. And, you know, so... being a part of that, you know, was fun to work on. So I think, you know, to the extent that people learn that this resource is available and that they can, you know, get their message out, you know, I think, you know, we should do more to publicize it's that fact.
It takes very little. You don't have to go in to the studio and take C courses. Right, yeah. I mean, that's like something, I think that's kind of pushed more, you know, join and take courses and all this stuff, but you don't have to do that.
Right. Well, it's a valuable skill to take those courses and learn how to do it in terms of, you know, learning more about, you know, how to be an effective part of the media. I think those are extremely helpful courses.
Mm.
You know, but I think, you know, there's various ways for people to participate.
R, don't, W, A. Don't wait until you've taken those courses. You could be putting shows on and then take the courses.
Yeah, well, I've never taken any of those courses yet, and yet I've worked with groups and, you know, had a few programs on, nowhere near as many as you. But, you know, I'm actually looking forward to doing more of those. I've gotten so much, you know, positive response to the couple that we did. You know, that I'd like to do more of those kinds of events. So I actually had a meeting 2 weeks ago with somebody trying to think about, you know, how to follow up on some of those events and do additional ones. So keep your eyes peeled. We might have a few more of those special kind of events.
Do you want me to read some more of this? Okay. So they're showing, all right, so now this is the next paragraph. Quote, they're showing red hot porno on that thing, said Berkeley Council member Betty Olds. We give those suckers $232,000 every year to put on this crap. The other night they were showing this woman give herself an orgasm, Olds said. And they had the camera right down there on her vagina showing everything, end of quotes. Olds has tried numerous times to restrict the shows being broadcast, which includes explicit sexual material. She's never been successful because the Federal Communications Commission and the federal courts have consistently ruled against any attempts to censor local community programming. When a potential producer submits a show for broadcast, they're asked to fill out a form that requires their name, address, and phone number and clearly states that the local programmer is entirely responsible for the program's content. If the material is illegal, such as child pornography, the producer is held responsible. We're forbidden from censoring programs, said Brian Scott, BTV's executive director. We're not even allowed to look at it before it's broadcast. If you bring in a tape, we're required to run it. There used to be a law that restricted broadcasting adult material to the 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. time slots, but that was struck down by the courts. There no longer are any uniform community standards. I am not DSU sure if that's about that. We hadn't heard anything about that.
No.
Are you aware of that?
Well, I've heard conflicting things, but, you know, I think one council member can be offended by, I mean, certainly, you know, there are council members who are offended by the things that I say at city council meetings. So, you know, I don't think whether or not a council member likes somebody's shows or thinks, I mean, I think it's pornographic, you know, to, you know, all kinds of violence, you know, is far more pornographic to me. But, you know, that's, you know, pretty irrelevant.
I don't think pornography is really red hot either.
So, but you know, even though Betty Olds is at least appears from the quotes that are given to her in the newspaper to be totally, you know, unsupportive and unaware of the importance of the free speech in this issue, you know, on the other hand, you have to remember she's one of the three people who voted against the horrendous settlement agreement with the university, the secret deal with the university.
Yes.
So, yes. You know, it's just like, I mean, there are, you agree on some issues and you don't agree on other issues. So, you know, that agreement is, you know, probably the worst thing that Berkeley government has done this year. And we could have fought for great environmental policies and getting, I mean, we could have fought to get a free EcoPass for UC employees so that they would be more likely to ride buses instead of their cars. We could have supported the students in fighting. The students are getting charged millions of dollars in their dorm fees to pay for parking for, you know, primarily for faculty and staff and other things like that. As part of the horrible parking replacement policy applying to student housing locations, you know, we could have fought for those kinds of things. We could have fought for, like, the university to actually pay the bills that they owe the city, like their sewer bills and their parking taxes. And instead, there was a secret settlement that, you know, despite promises after promise that the public would get to know about it, the public never got to know what was in the deal until after the papers were signed. So, you know, and on that, at least, Betty Olds was, I would consider, a good vote because she voted against it. And it was a horrendous thing. So life is funny. Sometimes, you know, you don't agree with people on that, on the issue of free speech with Berkeley Community Media. She may not be totally aware yet. Maybe she'll learn. You know, but on this other thing, which is perhaps the biggest issue of the year that I can think of, you know, she went the right way. So I try to think positively about everyone to the greatest extent that I'm able to.
You are a great
optimist.
No, a great P.O. politician. You are a great politician.
I actually feel, you know, I like to emphasize the positive long before I ever ran for office. I always like to thank people when they do good things, even if you disagree with them most of the time, and try to emphasize the positive as much as possible, which doesn't mean being Pollyannish and refusing to criticize horrible things that people are doing. It just means, you know, when they give you a chance to say something good, you know, say it. And when they do something horrible, say that too. You know.
Like when, where, where else can you hea hear thae these things? Then on Berkeley Community Media, these kinds of conversations.
Yeah, well, like many of the things that we've talked about tonight, I mean, how many places have you heard about the, you know, the Claremont workers, the boycott of the Hotel Claremont and the boycott of the Gallo Wine Company, zero waste policy, the hypocrisy of the Transaction Corporation and Patrick Kennedy. I mean, many of the things that we're talking about here on Berkeley Community Media, there's very few opportunities to hear about them. Your show, you know, in general, you know, there's not that many opportunities for people to have exposure to these different ideas and different experiences. So it's an extraordinarily valuable resource.
Yes.
And we really need to make sure that when we do a new contract with Comcast or whatever corporation buys them out, since they keep, you know, it's been bought out by so many companies, I don't know how many months or years they're going to stay with this one. You know, we need to make sure that we get at least as much money and resources going into Berkeley Community Media as we have now. You know, my dream would be that the entire amount that we get from the contract
would all
go to Berkeley Community Media.
That would be so great.
And really organize, reach out to organize people to know that they can participate.
They can have a NI. Just for example, someone on staff at night. You know, there's no one on staff at night. And so we could get a job because we're the ones to let them know. Not just our show. Whenever there's a show that doesn't play and there's no one there. And so when they come in the next day, that's how they know something didn't play.
Well, and also if they could have the resources to have, you know, like a staff person that would widely go out and let people know that they could be doing the same thing as what you're doing.
Yeah.
That kind of resource, you know, they really deserve that kind of support to help them. I think they do phenomenally good work with what limited resources they have, but I think they could do even more if we gave them the kind of resources that they deserve.
Yes. Oh, continue. Yeah. Okay. Yes. The station is not allowed to run material that is commercial in intent. Thus, no home shopping networks or investment opportunities. Mm. We have to take all commercial programming off the air, said Diamond. The station offers regular, inexpensive classes in filmmaking and will help the would-be producer create original shows both as single segments and as serialized weekly programs. But you don't have to do that. You can just bring a tape in and drop it off. Yeah. They need more community involvement, says Mel Vapour, program director of the East Bay Media Center. He and his partner, Paul Blake, were instrumental in establishing local community access television in Berkeley in the 1980s. They need to attract or create a higher quality producer, but they aren't and they can't. Look at the programming. I don't think the people running it have the touch. Vapour and his partner produce the annual Berkeley Video Festival every October and show their material on the web. Paul and Mel. Were the first doing this. I don't really know the details of the story, but they were the first ones involved in the community access in Berkeley.
Uh-huh. And Paul was, I think, was on the telecommunications task force and contributed a lot of good ideas. And their video fest is pretty cool, actually. They've got some of their stuff is really exciting.
They. J H E helped me get started. Yeah, absolutely. They Mel sat down with us and helped Frank edit something at their space and gave us discounted prices, and they were very generous with us.
I was sort of disappointed in that story that it sort of portrayed an image like it's us versus them. When in my mind these two resources are both wonderful resources for the people of Berkeley, and I don't see them as in opposition or fighting with each other. I think, you know, they're offering a somewhat different service, both of which are very valuable to the people of Richmond. I think they're both great organizations doing really good stuff.
Yes.
But I don't know why the reporter made it seem like somehow
he called us. That's how we found out about the story. He wanted to get Frank's input, but we were in L.A. when all that happened.
Yeah.
So
who knows?
He said that he's expecting there to be a follow-up, so we'll see if that really happens. How? Why? Follow up? Why follow up this story? Does he know something he's not telling us?
I don't know. I think one reason to do a follow-up would be, you know, instead of having one side of the city council represented showing that, you know, people are less sympathetic, that there should be, you know, representatives of the rest of the city council quoted saying, you know, Berkeley community media and these programs, you know, are an important part of, you know, Berkeley's long tradition of supporting free speech. And that, I don't think that came out in that story.
Were you contacted for the story?
No.
No. Yeah.
But, you know, it's, I mean, reporters are usually rushing to meet their deadline and they make a few phone calls and get their story out.
Like,
I think the Berkeley Daily Planet does a lot more detailed stories and, you know, they've probably done more to cover what's happening. I learn more by reading the Daily Planet than any other newspaper ever in my time in Berkeley.
That's right.
And it's amazing that they cover so many stories in their little tiny paper. You know, the Chronicle and the TV and radio people, you know, sort of, they only cover Berkeley, it seems like, it's when it's like the only in Berkeley would blah blah blah.
Right.
And you know, and I think it's really important to have, you know, as much information out there to the public about what's really going on. So I think the Daily Planet is providing a phenomenal resource to people in how many stories they cover. I don't know how long the East Bay Daily News is going to be around, but I think the more the merrier. The more media there are, you know, the more public access, you know, people putting their perspectives out like you are and, you know, they're with their slant, and the more newspapers, the merrier. It's just helps people understand what's going on.
Like when I did a zine. People always see, I called it a sex zine, even though, you know, there was some, what people call sex, maybe we'd have like nude photographs or an erotic poem or something like that, but it was really not even like the majority of what was in it, but that was the thing that people kind of caught on to.
Well, you know, there are a certain amount of prudes who, you know, do not appreciate art and, you know, and beauty. And, you know, so, you know, this is, I mean, that's the history of art, you know, is how many religions and how many governments and, you know, people try to suppress people expressing their artistic visions. So, you know, it's somewhat better in Berkeley than it is in you know, many cities and many states and countries at various times. But, you know, that element of repression and fear of anything to do with sex and sexuality and sexual orientation and all the, you know, all of those things, you know, there's a lot of fear and hatred and prejudice and it's, you know, we have to outgrow it.
S. Especially when on, when is, no, when it is Jay, you just a part of system. Life?
Yeah.
No. Oh, when you're saying about with the zine. Oh, especially when just it was a just part a one zine. Part, one small part of it to fixate on that. If it was a zine all about erotic, it would make more sense to you. They would A, C, accept, accept it more. That was Frank's theory all the time, that people had a problem with it being integrated into everything else and just being one facet of the big thing. Like, on this show, if we, Jay, just did erotic stuff, you think people would have less problem with it than the fact that it's integrated?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I agree with that thought or not. I think people are scared. So I don't know that having it isolated as a separate thing will take away their scariness or fears. Maybe, but you know, I think it's just something people are afraid of. And hopefully, you know, one of the wonderful things about being in Berkeley is there are so many straight people in Berkeley who are very strongly pro-gay, pro-lesbian, pro-transgender. And, you know, so many people who really, you know, wouldn't watch anything about sex, but who are strongly in support that you have a free speech right to watch it and to produce it, you know. So that's part of what I love about Berkeley and the Bay Area is, you know, it's not just gay people who are pro-gay rights. Lots of straight people are here. And it's not just people interested in sex. Lots of people who have virtually no interest in a sex program would strongly defend free speech rights to have it. So, you know, that sort of goes against that image that it's only about people being selfish. Because in Berkeley, a lot of people who are seemingly, it's not at all selfish because they're supporting other people having their free speech and being themselves.
Yeah.
That's part of what I love about living here.
Or L, or it is not H A L half A half ass S E selfish. It's not half assed selfish. What is not half-assed selfish? The way... I think I got it. When? Where? What? People? You usually think of as selfish is... really half is really S half ass selfish. B E because if your R I if your rights and F R freedoms are T A taken away, I am N E I'm next.
Yeah. Well, I guess maybe I'm not really that worried about people being selfish. because the most selfish individual causes far less damage to the world than, you know, the numerous corporations that are, you know, practicing greed for the corporation and destroying the environment and destroying human rights and labor rights and all those kinds of things. So, you know, I guess I don't sort of share a puritanical, like, selfishness is evil and horrible. It's, you know, I guess I see more enlightened self-interest as a positive tool in society.
Yes, yes. That's what you're talking. That's what people, Frank is calling real selfish.
Yeah, people should stand up for themselves and, you know, and stand up for other people too. You know, ideally be part of a social movement to stand up for all of us. But if all that you have the time and energy to do is to stand up for yourself, to not be oppressed and not have your free speech taken away and not have your rights taken away, that's better than not standing up for anybody. It's it's better still if you can stand up for everybody else's rights at the same time. But, you know, whatever we're each ready to do.
But there's, I think, only a line left in this article. Community television may have had its day in the sun, Vapor said.
No, its day is yet to come.
Indie producers no longer need a facility or a broadcaster. For a few thousand dollars, you can produce a digital camera, a Macintosh computer, and a program that allows you to become a producer in your bedroom. The future is in video on demand, web streaming, and DVDs. That's all a quote from Mel Vapor.
Well, there's a degree of logic and truth to that in terms of the technology evolving, and that's a good thing. But I think community media will be with us for a long time to come, and I'm expecting that it will become more vital.
Yes.
And more of a resource that more people rely upon. And that's not to say that these newer technologies are, you know, not as good. And in some ways,
we do both.
Yeah,
we do both.
In some ways, they're compatible and mutually enhancing.
Yes.
Rather than contradictory.
Don't give up. C H A N N channel C H A channels. You don't give up channels of change of C
communication.
You don't give up channels of communication.
I haven't given up reading the New York Times because I watch C-SPAN and CNN. You know, I read like many newspapers. Like every day I read like 8 newspapers, and I watch TV and I listen to the radio and I watch Berkeley Community Media as well as national and international. And I guess in part I'm a news junkie and information junkie, so I like to listen to all kinds of things.
Would be like saying RA radio is fading out because people have internet now, for example. Why have KPFA? Because people can just go online and get all that information.
It would be just
as silly.
Yeah, each tool of communication is filling a different niche, and they will ebb and flow, and, you know, some will probably disappear, and other ones will get bigger.
We people don't have many C channels of communication. So right. Why give any of them up?
Right, and the certainly the mainstream media are controlled by a small number of corporations that only allow a certain range of perspectives. What's presented, you know, as the right and the left, I mean, the so-called left-wing view rarely represents what I think of as left-wing views. So, you know, the more local media and the more, you know, in terms of community media and media that transcends locality, like, you know, on the internet and things like that, that just gets more information out that might not get out to millions of people. And that's good.
S. Oh, so when are you running for mayor?
I wasn't told when I was invited to the show that that was the topic, so I haven't prepared a response to that question yet. I'm very happy being a city council member and fighting on the many issues that I'm fighting on. And I think, you know, in the near future, my energy is going to go into trying to build a coalition to get the progressive people of Berkeley who vote for progressive policies and people to get us organized to pressure the city council and the mayor to do the right thing on all these different issues that we talked about. And, you know, I'm more interested in organizing some kind of progressive unity coalition rather than who's going to run for what office next. Time will tell.
R.
All those things.
E. A. You freaked. A. A. Amy Allison out. Oh, she said that you were always there. That whatever event that she was at, you were there too. And even in Oakland.
Well, I think, you know, the struggles that people are engaged in for peace and justice and human rights and all these different issues, you know, don't just happen in Berkeley. You know, they happen, you know, in Alameda County and in the state of California. And, you know, if you believe in fighting for the people, you have to be engaged and help people wherever they are. So, I think Oakland's government is even more, you know, reactionary than Berkeley's is in comparison to how liberal the people of Oakland are. So, you know, I certainly try to help Nancy Nadell and Amy Allison and, you know, the more liberal and progressive people in Oakland. I think their government should be more reflective of the people who live in their city. So, you know, I don't think it's about, you know, what office I'm running for or what exactly I'm doing. It's more about building social movements and building coalitions to get all of us engaged in these battles. And, you know, then the social movements and the political movements can pick whoever it is that they're going to run. Who knows who it'll be at what particular time. That's, you know, individual person isn't really what it's about to me. It's building the movements and having the movements, you know, support candidates and support policies.
Are you O-P-P opposed? I S T
opposite?
No, sorry. Was it are you O? No, are you H? O, P, E,
hopeful?
Are you hopeful? Optimistic?
Are you optimistic?
Are you hopeful?
I mean, generally, I've been a very optimistic person all my life. And, you know, when I was, when I lived with my foster parents and I was getting whipped and beaten, I thought, you know, running away and escaping out to see the rest of the world was a wonderful opportunity to gain freedom and see what the world was like. Mm-hmm. And so I've always been an optimistic person, no matter how bad the situation I was in. I think the situation in Berkeley is far superior to anything I experienced back then. And when we have had bunches of people come and pressure city government, generally liberal or progressive things have a pretty good chance of happening sooner or later. So I'm actually very hopeful that if we get ourselves organized and really educate on the different issues, educate the public at large and educate the elected officials, that we can really see success on a lot of these kinds of issues, environmental issues. The tree ordinance that Donna Spring's been trying to do for, you know, since, you know, who knows how many decades. You know, the sunshine ordinance that we still don't have. You know, I'm actually optimistic that those kinds of things will become Berkeley's policy. If we get organized, it'll happen much sooner. And I'm hoping that you'll be a part of help, you know, as you have before, in helping to organize and get information out.
You should be on every 6 months, should be on this show every 6 months, just to kind of talk about what's going on in the past 6 months.
Sure, that would be fun. Yeah, it's been several years since I think I was here before. Yeah. I can't even remember how long ago it was. It seems
I'll
like
mark
ages.
It in my book. 6 months. You are in on BTV a lot. You mean just on our, because our programs repeat, so that you, you're on from time to time, repeat it. So, if you were on every 6 months, you'd be on a lot. If you CHA change, they know it. The viewers know it. If you change, people will be able to compare what you said because it's repeated all the time.
Okay. Well,
so whatever you said last time, they're probably more aware of it than we are because it's been on.
For better or worse, you know, I really, you know, my core values and the many battles that I'm engaged in, you know, are pretty much the same battles that I've been fighting all my life, fighting racism, sexism, and prejudice. And
me too.
You know, it's, you know, they take different, you know, there are different specifics in different years, you know, that each cause has, you know, this particular battle at this moment, you know, but, you know, free speech and freedom of assembly and, you know, the U.S. defending the Constitution. You know, that's sort of like a perpetual battle that will probably go on for a long time. And
Who are you? Oh, you should tell people who you are. Your name.
Well, if you've watched us for this long, you probably guessed who I was. I'm Frank Moore's foster brother.
I have a lot of them, foster brothers. Leroy Moore. They refer to themselves as twins, Frank and Leroy.
Oh yeah, Leroy's done a lot of interesting stuff.
Back to who you are.
My name is Chris Worthington. And currently I have the honor of serving on the Berkeley City Council and fighting to keep Berkeley true to the values of the people of Berkeley.
And A L O T, a lot of people want him for M A major, for MA, for mayor. A lot of people want Chris for mayor.
Well, who knows what any of us will be doing in the next few years, but the important thing is that we all be working together and helping each other out and fighting on our different causes that we believe in.
He's trying to break a story. Maybe in 6 months. Okay, so is that a wrap? Okay, and this will be archived at lover.com, L-U-V-E-R.com, the Shaman's Den archives. You can check on the lover schedule for the Shaman's Den. And R-A-D, and Radio for All, also on the internet. And then, of course, everybody in Berkeley knows you can watch this all the time on BTV. Okay, that's it. Bye-bye.